Thank you. Dr. Barb Crittenden, thank you very much. I'm real pleased to be on the campus here at Southwest Iowa Community College. And first of all, I wanted to say we appreciate the outstanding work the community colleges do in educating people in our state and many people also administering the job training program that we've had. It was actually started the first year that I was governor. It's been very successful. I think I was on campus here just a couple of years ago and spoke to one of your non-traditional student groups that I think has become more and more important with the economy that we're facing and the number of people that are unemployed. Many people are going back to the community colleges to get training to become employed again, and that is critically important to our state and to our economic development success. When I made the decision to run for governor again, I decided that I would do as I did before, and that is go to every county every year. But this time, I decided it was important not only to get to every county, and I've already been to all 99 counties, so I've been here to Crescent a couple times previously already in this campaign, but I decided it was important to go not only to every county in Iowa, but to go to every college and university in the state. Now, we may not get to every campus of every community college, because I know the community colleges have multiple campuses, but I'm really proud to be on your campus and to talk about what I think is the most important issue facing our state, and that is jobs and economic development. And when I made the decision to run again, it was because I feel that, well, I had a lot of people come to me and say, we need your experience and leadership to get not only the state's budget back on track, but also to put the focus where it needs to be on jobs, because we know that you can do it. You did it before. When I became governor back in the farm crisis period in the 80s, we had 8.5% unemployment in Iowa. We worked day in and day out to bring more business and jobs to the state and to make Iowa more competitive. And I'm proud to say when I left office, we had a record number of people employed and only 2.5% unemployment. So as I announced my decision to run again, I made it very clear that I had a very ambitious goal of creating 200,000 new jobs over the next 5 years. There are nearly 114,000 Iowans presently out of work, and that's the highest unemployment we've had in this state in 24 years. And there's no greater priority that a chief executive for the state should have than job creation. To that end, I proposed a number of new policy ideas to put Iowa on a path of job growth and business expansion. To do this, however, we must change the way business is done in Iowa. According to U.S. News and World Report, Iowa is one of the worst states in the nation to start a business. So we have a much smaller number of businesses that are started in our state than other states. And I think part of that is because of excessive government interference. You may have seen an article in the Des Moines Register not too long ago about a couple women here in Southwest Iowa that wanted to start a new business to make goat cheese. And they ran into so many regulatory burdens from the Department of Natural Resources that they decided to actually call a town meeting out there on the farm to explain what they were trying to do. And a number of legislators came. They invited the director of the DNR. He didn't show up, but I don't know if it's just coincidence, but he resigned the next day to take a federal job in Minnesota. So I think that's pretty telling. Excessive government regulation frustrates the ability of Iowa to compete when attracting and maintaining businesses. Iowa employers support and will prosper under reasonable regulation. However, when bureaucrats go too far and make it difficult for employers, it puts us at a competitive disadvantage to other states. And it's important that we understand that it's businesses, not government, that create long-term sustainable jobs. When the legislature passes a law, typically it grants rulemaking authority to a department or agency that's in charge with enforcing the law. These rules have the force and effect of law, but are not created by elected officials. This leaves an accountability gap, which allows agencies or bureaucrats to exceed legislative intent. And as I've traveled around the state of Iowa in the last several months, I've heard this again and again from businesses. I've heard it from communities with regard to the regulations that are being imposed on them. We must make changes in the way these rules are created and enforced if we are to restore our ability to grow high-quality jobs here in the state of Iowa. Therefore, the new Iowa Department for the new Iowa Partnership for Economic Progress, which we want to create as a public-private partnership to help us work to attract business and jobs to our state, very similar to what we're already doing with the Main Street program. We want to make state government take an active role in this new partnership in restoring the appropriate balance between bureaucracy and business. Today, I'm proposing two concepts to implement through legislation and executive order an increase in job opportunities in Iowa. The first is, it is my intention, if elected governor, to sign an executive order requiring a small business and jobs impact statement on all regulations. We must know the impact of new regulations and what impact they're going to have on jobs and businesses in our state. My executive order will require that all proposed administrative rules accompany a small business and jobs impact statement. I will also ask the legislature to adopt a similar requirement for all proposed new legislation. The process will be similar to the one that we already have for a fiscal analysis on legislation being proposed in the Iowa General Assembly. In other words, if you introduce a bill in the legislature now, you have to have a fiscal note saying what the impact is going to have on the state budget. This would say, and new laws would have to have a statement say, what was the impact going to have on business? For instance, you had a proposal before the General Assembly the last couple of years to impose prevailing wage on all government projects, which would drive up the cost for construction here if you want to do a building at the community college. And I'm told it would drive up the cost, say, 15%. Well, this is something that's important because obviously it impacts the finances of these projects. Well, we also have things like permitting doctor shopping under workers' comp, which I'm told would drive up those costs 13-15% for businesses. This would require a similar situation to the fiscal note requirement. And the process will be similar to the one that we presently have for the fiscal analysis, but it would apply to those things that impact on business and job growth. The impact statement would include, but not limited to, projections on how many small businesses will be affected by the law or proposed regulation, its impact on employment, and the effect it has on the cost of doing business in Iowa. In addition, I want to make sure that concerns of small businesses are heard. To that end, we would require the Iowa Partnership for Economic Progress, the new agency that would be in charge of promoting economic development and partnering with the private sector, to engage business owners and employers in a thorough review of new and existing state agency regulations and Iowa laws that affect small business. The Iowa Partnership for Economic Progress will be charged with providing businesses with advice and suggestions on the implementation of more flexible alternatives to ensure regulatory compliance and to help state agencies adopt outcome-based regulations that focus on the results rather than all kinds of requirements that may not be necessary. That focus more on meeting the end goals of the regulation rather than trying to micromanage compliance. And this is something that I hear more and more as I travel around the state is micromanagement by government has caused many businesses to fail. I will also ask the Iowa Partnership for Economic Progress to have the ability to provide official comment, alternatives, and recommendations to the governor, legislature, and administrative rules review committee on how this could be done in a better, maybe more efficient way. The second proposal today is to sunset all state regulations affecting job creation and retention. This proposal would mean that legislation will create, this proposed legislation, which would establish a sunset, would say that we would have over a 4-year period, a staggering sunset on all rules and agencies. Now, the legislature can sunset laws now, but this would say we would sunset all of these administrative rules, which would mean you would have to, over a 4-year period, do a systematic review of every regulation. And I think this can have a tremendous effect of eliminating those that are unnecessary and making them, the ones that maybe need to be strengthened to be more effective, be strengthened, and the ones that are outmoded or not needed can be eliminated. And this will require some work, but to me it makes sense, and it would also get the Legislative Rules Review Committee, which represents the people of Iowa, in the process. My proposed legislation will create a staggering 4-year rolling sunset of all state regulations affecting job creation and retention. This change will drive a top-to-bottom review of our existing rules to find and eliminate redundancies, inefficiencies, and frankly, kill job-creating bureaucracy that inhibits economic growth and job opportunities. Also, by adopting this change, our rules will continue to be updated in a process that is more readily open to public scrutiny and comment. So this process needs to be open and transparent so we can see through this period of time exactly the public will have input into this process. The goal of 200,000 new jobs in Iowa is ambitious, but you know, I came in as governor during the farm crisis, and I know that if you work at it day in and day out and year in and year out, and you make Iowa more competitive, and you can be successful in that. I don't apologize for setting an ambitious goal. I believe it's critically important that we set ambitious goals, but then I also think it's important with you to share the strategy. Part of the strategy is to this whole process we're announcing today. Previously, I've talked about how we can expand international trade, how we can reduce the tax burden, and how we can do other things. But all these things fit together. There's not one silver bullet for how we get the Iowa economy going, or one simple answer to how we create the jobs to achieve that ambitious goal. But I think if we do that together and we really build this effective partnership, and we have the state partnering with people at the local level and with the private sector, we can be successful. With the input and help of Iowans, combined with our focus on putting policy above politics, I'm confident that we can grow the Iowa economy and truly make Iowa open for business again. I'm excited about this opportunity. I believe that we have some big challenges facing us, but I also know that we have in Iowa the hardest working people that you can possibly have. And I've seen Iowans willing to roll up their sleeves and do what's necessary to get the job done, and I'm looking forward to the opportunity to lead that. Thank you very much. I wanted to open it for questions. Yes, sir.
What do you propose to keep jobs in Iowa rather than going overseas?
What do we propose to do to keep jobs in Iowa rather than going overseas? Make us more competitive. The key, I think, to keeping jobs in Iowa is to reduce some of the burdens and regulations on business that drive them overseas. Many of those overseas countries don't have the regulations we do. The other thing is the tax burden. The commercial property tax in Iowa among the highest in the country. I want to reduce, instead of taxing a commercial business at 100% of market value, only tax it at 60%. You know, for farmland, we don't tax it at 100% of market value anymore. We tax it on its productivity. And we use a 5-year rolling average based on commodity prices. We have a rollback for residential. We also got rid of, when I was governor before, the tax on machinery and equipment for industry. But for commercial businesses, your Main Street business, your small businesses, they're paying 100% of market value. Governor Culver promised he'd do something about it.
Well, he appointed a commission. They had meetings, they made a report, but nothing was done. So that's what I'm saying. I've got a plan. Tax the new only at 100%, roll the existing back over a 4 or 5 year period to that 60% level. So that's one of the things we can do to make Iowa more competitive. The other thing is, thank you. We need to aggressively market our state. For instance, we have an opportunity to develop a free trade agreement with South Korea. That has to be approved by the Congress and the President. But if we have that free trade agreement, we think we could quadruple our pork exports. When I was governor before, we started selling beef in Japan. It was greatly successful. We also got some investments in Iowa. We got that whole complex at Eddyville, where we've got a Cargill and Ajinomoto and Wacker Chemie. We were also able to get, and actually we've already gotten a big South Korean investment here from when I was governor before, the PMX Brass Foundry in Cedar Rapids. I believe that we can get more of that if we're actively showing the decision makers in business that Iowa is a competitive place to do business. Other questions back here?
I'm a student out here at SWCC.
Yep.
And in order to improve the job market, you have to strive for something for a better quality of life. In order to do that, we've made changes with laws to prohibit smoking in certain places, parks, and businesses.
Yep.
So that more people want to go to them. Now that that's lowered, is there anything going to be done to tax and remove alcohol from parks and campuses like we have with cigarettes?
Well, I didn't know that they permitted alcohol on the campuses. I don't think they do they? No. No, I don't think we did. We didn't at Des Moines University, and I don't think most college campuses you can have alcohol. State parks is another issue, and I think there is some discussion about that. They've had some problems up at Okoboji, I think, 4th of July, because of alcohol and things like that, and I think that's something certainly is probably worth looking into. Yes, sir.
With the people that serve on your new public-private partnership plans, will they be elected for that position?
No, they would be appointed. They would be appointed, but they would also, the public-private partnership, what we're looking at there is people that would be, they would be appointed. The present commission is appointed as well. But this would be one that would also represent various business groups as well as, but it would be appointed.
Who appoints them? And it looks to me like that would kind of, we as a voter people, we'd be losing some of our representation there.
You don't have any representation there now. It's appointed by the governor. These new people would also be appointed by the governor, but there would be a little more restrictive because they would have to be some of them would have to come from the partnership organizations representing the groups that are involved in economic development, including the utilities, including groups like the Iowa Area Development Group and the Association of Business and Industry and the Iowa Business Council and groups like that, representing business.
I have a couple more if it'd be all right.
Yeah.
A while back, you was in our county and you asked about county. You said the counties need to get more efficient. So how can we do that when we got the federal and the state jamming stuff down our direction?
Good question.
And I had one more if it'd be all right after you get done.
Okay. You're exactly right. There's a lot of unfunded mandates pushed on local governments by the federal and state government. Part of what we want to do when we look at this is how can we reduce state mandates on local governments. I want to do a comprehensive review of that as well as the impact. Today I'm talking about the impact on business, but we need to do the same thing for local governments, and that is look at how we can give more flexibility to local governments to meet that need. Now, I think you know that my running mate for lieutenant governor is Senator Kim Reynolds, who represents this district. And when she was county treasurer in Clark County, she was one that came to me and said, I've got a better way to handle the driver's license issuance and renewals. We used to have the DOT would go around and they'd come to each county a half a day every 2 weeks. And then we had a commission to reform state spending, and they said, oh, we can save money if we regionalize this. Instead of going to every county, you'd have to drive 100 miles to get your driver's license renewed. Well, you can imagine how that went over in rural Iowa. People didn't like that idea at all, but Kim Reynolds had a great idea. She said, well, the county treasurer's office, we're already doing vehicle registration, and we're doing property tax collections. In these rural counties, we can do it with our existing staff, and if we had the right equipment, we could do it and offer it 5 days a week, more convenient and less cost. Well, the DOT says, no, they never have the experience and the expertise to do that. But what we did is we funded a pilot project in 6 counties here in Southwest Iowa. It worked so well, we're now doing it in 81 counties. And that's an example of where, instead of the state taking it over or regionalizing it, we put it down to the local level, and it turned out to be better and more efficient. And that's, I've asked Kim Reynolds to work with me and look at ways that we can find more efficient and ways to do things. In some cases, that means more of it handled at the local level. In some cases, it might be sharing with other counties. But we need to look at more and better ways to deliver the service. But that's one of the best examples. Another thing that was done that she led was local governments being able to do this online. So if you want to pay your property taxes or vehicle registration, you can now do it online. You don't have to go to the courthouse. Those are all improvements that have been made. And I think we can do a lot more of those kind of things. Okay? Yeah. You have one more.
Yeah. It seems like there's a lot of people, and they're claiming to be conservative, and on the other side, too, are wanting a constitutional convention. Now, where do you feel about that, and where are you at?
Okay. Every 10 years in Iowa, there's an opportunity to vote as to whether they want a constitutional convention. The benefit of a constitutional convention is that if the people were to vote for a constitutional convention, then it would be up to the legislature to set up the rules for the convention, and any amendment to the Constitution would then have to be submitted back to a vote of the people. Okay, so it's up to you, and I would say, people should vote their own convictions on whether they think. Many people are upset at different things that are going on, or that the legislature hasn't responded on. This would be an opportunity, but the Constitution is, of course, the document that supersedes all the laws. So the Constitution is really a fundamental document. So it's very serious when you look at amending the Constitution. But the safeguard you've got is, if you do have a constitutional convention, and it's up to the voters of Iowa to decide by majority vote at the election, general election here this year, whether they want a convention or not. If they do, then any amendment that is approved would have to be individually submitted back to a vote of the people on the ballot. So that will be, and you'll have an opportunity to vote on that. Retention of the judges. There's also a constitutional amendment that would earmark, if there were an increase in the sales tax in the future, it would earmark a portion of that would go for natural resources. So those are all on the ballot in addition to all the offices. So I hope that helps answer your question. Yes, sir.
Recently, Governor Collinsworth made the statement that all of the money that he was borrowing to bond, I guess, would not cost the taxpayers a single penny, that it was always going to be paid for by money from the gambling interest. I was under the impression that there was already a regulation set up to what was happening to that money from the gambling interest by going back to counties. Am I right?
That money was supposed to go to the Rebuild Iowa Infrastructure Fund. When gambling was authorized, the money was specifically earmarked for the Rebuild Iowa Infrastructure Fund. And that money goes all over the state for projects. But because of the bonding plan, it's going to cost $55 million a year for the next 23 years. The money that would have gone to the Rebuild Iowa Infrastructure Fund is now going to be taken to pay back those bonds. So he's wrong on that. I mean, so he's saying, well, you're not going to be paying with property taxes, but you're going to be paying it out of money that would have gone for infrastructure projects in the state of Iowa. But that money won't be available because it's going to have to pay back the bonds.
It's just what I thought. Thank you.
Yeah, that's exactly the case. Yes, sir.
Two things. Are the Republicans going to take back the Iowa House and Senate? And number two, how would you respond to Tom Harkin's mule comment?
Well, first of all, I would more identify with the elephant than the mule. And I guess my feeling is that I think if you saw the vote in Missouri, 71% of the people in Missouri said they would like their state to opt out of the Obama health care. I believe our state should join the 20-some other states that are challenging some aspects of it that I believe are questionable in terms of the requirement that you have to buy insurance and things like that, something the government has not done before. So I guess I disagree with Tom Harkin on that issue. I think the people have their own mind on that issue. And okay, that was the second part of your question. The other part was, the first part had to do with, do I think Republicans will gain control of the legislature? I think there's an excellent chance for Republicans to gain control of at least the House of Representatives. In the Senate, it's a little more difficult. Republicans have to pick up 7 seats to gain control of the House of Representatives. Now, this seat right here is one of the hotly contested seats in the legislature. And this is one of the seats that we think could be a possibility of the Republicans picking up. But there are seats all over the state of Iowa that are presently held by Democrats. Republicans have more candidates this year than the Democrats do. And I say the Republicans are very motivated. So if I were to guess today, I would say I think Republicans have an excellent opportunity to gain control of the House of Representatives. On the Senate side, there are 25 Senate seats up, but 19 are held by Democrats. So if Republicans picked up 8 of those 19, they could gain control of that as well. So I think there's an opportunity for a significant change in the makeup of the legislature. I think it's very likely Republicans could gain control of the House, and the Senate would probably be a lot closer. And depends upon if Republicans do as well as some people think, it could even gain control of the Senate as well. But I wouldn't predict that at this point. Yes, sir.
Would you promote windmills like our present governor does?
Yes, in fact, we started that when I was governor. We started that back in the early 80s by passing a renewable energy standard. And that renewable energy standard was designed to promote ethanol, biodiesel, and wind energy. And it's been very successful. 28 states have copied what we've done. And some people now think we should have a national wind energy standard. So Culver may be taking credit for it, but it really started back when I was governor and then also during Vilsack. And we have grown our wind energy capacity to the point in Iowa that I think we rank number 2 to Texas now in wind generation. And obviously we're not near as big a state as Texas. Yes, sir.
Would you still support it if I proved to you it didn't qualify as renewable energy? Because it takes more energy to run it than if they put out, period.
Well, I don't know. I've had people tell me that about ethanol, and I've had them tell me
I'm not talking about ethanol.
You're talking about wind energy.
Wind varies. In order to meet this grid, they have to put so much energy into it that it doesn't pass the renewable energy.
Well, I
13 cents a kilowatt. Coal was 3 cents a kilowatt.
No, I understand that. I understand that. And I think that, first of all, there are some limitations to wind energy. It's not our total answer. I would agree with that. Because wind is intermittent. But the further north and west in Iowa get, the more wind you got. And in fact, they are generating significant amount of energy that actually we can sell in the grid, and they even are intending to build some power.
9 times out of 10, they never buy it back. They don't have to. There's nothing that says they have to.
Well, no,
but they don't do it. You check up, see.
Okay. Yes, sir.
I've got a question about education. For many years, we've been one of the leading states in the nation for education. Can you talk about your funding priorities for education in the future and your thoughts?
Well, first of all, let me say, I think, unfortunately, we've slipped in terms of our rank in terms of educational outcomes. It used to be on the NAEP tests back in the 90s, we were number 1. And recently, last year, I think 2009, we ranked like 28th in eighth grade math and 26th in fourth grade reading. I really think that, you know, that's a tragedy. We need to really change that. First and foremost, I think we need to have strict state standards. They need to be clear and consistent so that students know what they need to know and what they need to know and are able to do at each grade level along the way. And we need to have assessments, uniform assessments, so we can measure how they're doing. And then we need to reward and recognize good schools and good teachers that are accomplishing it. Those that aren't, we need to change, because it's not fair to fail our students in that way. So I think that's, in terms of funding for education, we need stability and predictability. What Governor Culver has done, I think, is just really unfortunate, because he promised the moon and then wasn't able to deliver it. And when, you know what they did in 2009, passed the biggest budget in Iowa history. We were already into a recession, passed the biggest budget in Iowa history. And then after, finally by October, it became obvious that, first of all, the auditor, Fiscal Bureau, and others said, this isn't going to work, it doesn't add up, and Culver just called them a bunch of naysayers and the Republicans in the legislature. So eventually what happened is, come October, then he totally panicked and did a massive 10% across the board cut. I would have brought the legislature back and made selective reductions, because the governor can only do across the board. But with the legislature's involvement and approval, you can make selective reductions and eliminate some full programs that weren't as high enough priority. Instead, he didn't do that. And then the result was, the across the board cut hit education hard, it hit the community colleges, it hit the students going to our state universities and other higher education institutions, and K through 12 education. They had the money authorized, but the state didn't provide the state aid that it was supposed to. So what did they have to do is either lay off teachers or raise property tax. We've now seen the biggest property tax increase for K through 12 education in 30 years that we've just gotten, and those bills are due at the end of this month. And that could have been avoided, or could have been, it wouldn't have had it been that bad if you had made a more selective reduction and not done that massive across the board cut. So I wanna provide stability and predictability. He's out there doing it again, promising teachers he's gonna give them a 4% allowable growth next year. There's no way he can afford it with the budget problems we're having. I just want to assure this community college and others in education that what we promise we're going to do, we will do, and there won't be more of these massive across-the-board cuts. But we're going to have to make some tough decisions to reduce the size and cost of government by about 15%, just to eliminate the structural deficit that's been built in, because they've used all this one-time money for ongoing expenses. And it's not going to be there next year. There's not going to be another stimulus. We can't afford it. And there's and they've used up the money from the senior living trust fund and these things. So we're going to have to make the tough decision. I'm willing to do that, but I want to do it in a thoughtful way that protects priorities like education and public safety. Yes, ma'am.
Yes. My grandchildren graduated from school here.
Yep.
Southwestern. One of them went all the way through, got her degree from Buena Vista. And that last year in college, or in high school, they all got their 1 year of college out here that was carried over. So each one of them graduated with that 1 year.
Yeah, and that's a great program.
It's wonderful. And now they've got Iowa and Iowa State somehow hooked up with this.
Right.
I was never so disappointed in my life when I picked up the paper and found out that these kids that were planning on that 1 year, they just got 1 year boost and got their feet through the door at the college in their senior year or whatever it might be, that now they have to pay a certain amount of dollars to get in there. I want to know what we can do to get those kids back so that they can go, and the ones that go are usually the ones that are determined enough to get that 4 year college. But they did away with it. I read it on the school board thing out there, and I don't know if it's state, federal, what it is, but.
Is that right? I'm not aware of that it's been done away with. But the program you're talking about, dual enrollment,
yes,
where they can dual enroll in high school and also take community college credit,
yes,
one of the greatest things that we have. We need to continue that, and it saves money for the family. Let me tell you a story. I live in a log home in Boone County. I know of three kids from Boone that got enough credits in high school to graduate from Des Moines Area Community College in Boone the same time they graduated from high school. That's 2 years credit. And when I got to be the president of Des Moines University, I met this cute young blonde student. Her name is Katie Howe. She was the youngest student we had there. And I found out how she's the youngest student because she'd done that. She came from Boone, and she'd done, and then she went to Iowa State, and then she went to Des Moines University for medical school. Not only did she do that, her two younger brothers did the same thing, all three of them. And two of them are already doctors, and the third one is just finishing up his medical school now. So we need to have programs like that. I support advanced placement. I support dual enrollment. I think that they should not be penalized for that. In fact, the whole idea of dual enrollment was to encourage people in high school that are high achievers to be able to get college credit at that time. Yes, sir.
Currently, California and Illinois are two states that are basically going bankrupt due to their pension funds.
Yep.
The state of Iowa, the current IFRS fund, is only funded at 81% according to their last audit.
Yeah.
What do you think we should do to try and get that back into balance?
Well, first of all, I think that obviously Iowa's not in as bad a shape as California or Illinois or New Jersey, but you're exactly right. It is not actuarially sound at this time. We need to do a comprehensive review of that. We need to look at what needs to be done. I think we need to seriously look at if there are ways that we can change the retirement system to be more. They did in the last session of the legislature make some changes, but I believe there's going to have to be more fundamental reforms. One of the people that's taking on this issue is Governor Chris Christie from New Jersey. I don't know if you follow, but that state's in a lot worse shape than we are. But he's come in and he's doing some fairly significant changes there. He's actually coming to do an event for me on the 4th of October. So I'm intending to visit with him and look at what they're proposing. But I think we're going to have to fundamentally look at this because what we've got, I think, is probably not sustainable. At least it's not as bad in Iowa as it is in a lot of other states. I would acknowledge that. But I don't think it's fair to the taxpayers to say that we have to increase a property tax when people have already lost money in their own retirement accounts to then have to raise their taxes to increase the contributions. So I think we've got to find a better way to bring this into balance than just raising the contribution rates of the employer. Yes, ma'am.
What are your views for preschool funding with voluntary preschools? Because, you know, you see commercials saying that you're totally going to eliminate those.
And that's not true. I support preschool education. I just don't think it should be a new entitlement paid for totally by the taxpayers. We have, for many years, had private and nonprofit preschools. Some of them are church-related. Some of them are, and now, of course, we have public preschools as well. And my feeling is this. What we ought to do is those people that can afford to pay tuition should do so. But we should provide financial assistance to the families that can't afford it. I want to see all kids. I don't think we can afford to have a new entitlement program that makes preschool free for everybody. We had that last year, and we set a 10% across the board and lay off of teachers. I don't think that's right. I think we, first of all, got to make our commitments to education, make good on those, and not do what we did last year. And then, in terms of dealing with the preschool situation, use those resources, but target the resources to those that financially can't afford to pay it. So that I think we can have preschool, but you pay tuition if you can afford it, and if you can't, then there would be financial assistance.
And I used to work for Head Start for 3 years, and that's a critical program. And the voluntary preschool funds helped immensely. It alleviated the staff's worry about, you know, you have a kid in your care 8 hours a day for 4 days. That's a safe zone for most of these kids.
Yep.
So, you know, you need to make sure priorities are set.
Well, if those would be provided for in the way I envision this, because it's based on the financial need, and those that are in Head Start are getting that help. But many, even before you had that, you had a lot of families that have paid their own for preschool for their own kids. Well, I'm saying they will continue to do that. Instead of right now, they're going to make it an entitlement program and nobody pays. Well, I don't think we can afford that. So that's why I'm saying I think we have a system where it really is based on needs. So we provide financial assistance based on need for preschool.
And then another question is, what are your views with smaller schools? I went to a small school, Orient Maxford,
yep.
Graduated with 20 kids. You know, there's people wanting to just eliminate these schools, but I don't know if that's going to be for the better good of how our education is right now with all the test scores and everything. How is that going to make Iowa prosper?
I think it would be a mistake to just say we're going to eliminate the small schools because, frankly, we'd end up with kids on buses for such a long period of time. I think that would be counterproductive. I think instead there's, and I've seen some partnerships that they've done. Actually, Kirkwood Community College over in Eastern Iowa has a partnership program with six small schools in Monticello. And what they're doing is they're offering higher levels of math and science and some vocational programs that they couldn't do on their own, but they're partnering with the community college. And so the way I think we could do it, to keep these small schools, so maybe you can't in a small school offer some of the higher levels of math and science, but the community college can offer that on a regional basis, and they can still enroll and take their other basic courses at the smaller school and then get those classes at the community college. So I think that kind of a partnership between the community colleges and local school districts, and I've seen that work very effectively. I saw the new facility they built in Monticello that's doing that with six districts, and I think there's another thing that can help small schools, and that is more charter schools. And I visited Southeast Webster Grand. They have a charter school, and they're working with Iowa Central Community College, and it's really helped. They have more of their kids going on to higher education as a result of it. Their test scores have gone up. And so I think if we can give more flexibility and more charter school opportunities to smaller school districts, as well as kind of this partnering with the community colleges, I think that can be the way that we can do it. Another thing that's really important is rural development, bringing business and jobs to our communities so we have more kids. You know, the way we're going to save our small schools is to have more children. Now, I want you to know my family is doing its part. My kids are all grown and they're starting to have grandchildren. Now, just on Monday of this week, my son and daughter-in-law had their third girl. So I've got Mackenzie, who's four, and she says, Grandpa and I are running for governor. He's my best campaigner. And we've got Bridget, and she's 17 months, and they just had Alexis, who was just born on Monday. And then my daughter, Allison, she's actually a third grade teacher in Waukee, and she just had her first baby, Sophia. Christine is her name. So we now have four grandchildren, and grandchildren are great. But you know, I really do think we got rural development and keeping people in smaller communities and having more children in these schools is the way we're going to keep our, as enrollment continues to decline, it's hard to keep, to provide quality education. So that is, so our efforts in job creation and economic development go hand in hand with saving the small schools. And I can tell you that Kim Reynolds has a real passion for rural development. When we talked to her about running for lieutenant governor, she said, you know, my real passion is for rural development. That's the district I represent, seven counties here in southwest Iowa. And she says, I want to really be a champion to bring more business and jobs and to make Iowa more competitive in rural, for rural development. And I think that can go a long ways towards keeping young people and having the children we need for the future in these small schools. So I think we're out of time. I want to thank you all very much. This is a great turnout, and I'm really proud to be here at Southwest Iowa Community College. Thank you very much.